Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's edition of the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, here today to talk to you about three issues in international education news that have come across our feeds in the last few days. And we're going to be starting today with actually some good news, and it's always good to see good news in international education. And I know many of us are still coming back off the high of NASA and certainly the swirl of activity from Washington, D.C. a couple weeks ago. And that is certainly true in my case, too. Had some very incredible conversations that week in Washington, D.C. and catching up with people that you might only see once or twice a year, or sometimes once every two or three years. So, very excited to that during NASA I was a part of one of the events that we're going to be talking about today, and that is the formation of a new study consortium or study organization for the various state and regional international education consortia that have developed in the last 20 years. I certainly had the pleasure of being a part of one, a very successful one in the 90s with Destination Indiana. And certainly, we'll talk about that today. I did want to start, though, as I do with all my midweek roundups, is to provide a couple of resources, links to folks. We'll do that throughout the episode today. But we always like to put, and Jason, thanks for joining the midweek roundup this week. Good to see you a couple weeks ago at NASA. Hope you are well. And I always like to provide a couple of resources to folks from the top to let you know where everything's coming from. First is the midweek roundup that you're seeing here is also being podcasted for those who'd rather listen to me than look at me. I get that completely. And so you can get that on all your favorites, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, Spotify, wherever you like to do your podcasting. You can subscribe to the Midweek Roundup there. So just search Midweek Roundup or SMIE Consulting and you'll find that. Also, I want to direct folks to our website, smieconsulting.org. A lot of great free resources, including presentations I've done. I have a regular blog series that combines all my various writing for different organizations and my own thoughts, one of which I'll be sharing with you today. And also has subscriptions to our e-newsletter, and that newsletter is actually where all of the three stories that I cover during the Midweek Roundup come from each week. So I always encourage you to subscribe to that so you keep up to date and get that in your Monday morning email inbox at 9 a.m. Eastern. And then we'll talk more in depth about three of those stories that have popped up in that newsletter. So where to begin? Let's start, of course, with what happened at NASA. This is many of you may not have been a part of this conversation or this particular event at NASA, and it was actually hosted in conjunction with the U.S. Commercial Service, Foreign Commercial Service, as well as Study Maryland. They hosted a joint event on Thursday at NASA, and I'm posting a couple of links to stories that popped up. One of which is from the Pi News, one of my favorite international ed go-to resources on topics in our field of study. And the other is a blog that I wrote shortly after the NASA conference and after attending that reception and giving me my thoughts and perspectives on what this potential national organization can do. Now, to kind of give you the rough summary of what happened with, or how this forum formed, U.S. Commercial Service has been doing a great deal of work since the early 2000s, working with different states who are eager to form their own international ed consortia, and have been instrumental in setting up many across the country. They've also done some excellent work under former education team lead Jim Paul, and now current team lead for the last few years, Gabriela Zelaya from California. And they've really developed a series of resources for the state associations who are developing and held, and have regional folks who work with the individual states. I've gotten to know several of those over the years, and during my time at Education USA, also did presentations regularly at the state consortium meetings to help them develop. Commercial Services certainly has been a significant player with a number of those state consortia that have formed, including Study Maryland, which was the other main driver of this national organization that formed. And it's called USA, a Study Destination. So the website is still in development, and if you try to go to usasd.org right now, it actually takes you to, if you have a decent web browser with protection, it will tell you it's not a safe link to proceed to, but it is safe. So it's actually www.usasd.us. It's not secured apparently for whatever reason, but I'm sure that'll get corrected as the website develops. But the site itself is really meant to be, and the organization in its initial stages is meant to be a kind of a gathering place for state consortia. I know that this has been a long time coming. During my time at Education USA, we had some events at the Education USA Forum in 2012 and 2013, specifically for the consortia leaders. We had roundtables for them where we discussed best practices, discussed next steps. And one of those next steps is potentially developing an international education strategy for the country. Because the way our system is set up, many of my colleagues outside the U.S. always ask, well, why don't you guys have a national strategy? And, well, it's simple fact is we're not set up that way. We don't have a national ministry of education. The Department of Education is really for secondary and primary schools and does some work with higher ed and really messes it up more so than has benefits for higher education. But certainly there are some challenges. They're not really fit to do this internationally. They're not set up that way. And the other players who have had laid claim to wanting to develop something like this are U.S. Department of Commerce and U.S. Department of State. They've each at different points claimed ownership of this, though no one really can legitimately say that. They both feel they have a role to play. Obviously, with commercial service, they're taking it on the taking it from the export industry of what higher ed is, the fifth largest export industry in the United States, valued at, in their estimation, over $42 billion a year. And Department of State obviously feels it's well within their mission statement as a public diplomacy piece with Education USA, the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, and the work they do abroad with scholarships and both for inbound and outbound students. There's always a lot of that going on. So there's still, though they at the reception I asked both Commerce and State folks together, are they going to play nice on this one? And they, of course, said yes. Well, I didn't expect them to say anything else different, but there's certainly a lot that can be done with an organization like this, USA Study Destination. It's a starting point. And frankly, if anything's going to develop in terms of a national, internationalized strategy, it's going to be ground up because, frankly, at the national level, until there's presidential level leadership that can say to the various departments involved, get yourselves on the same page, you're going to meet, you're going to include the university leaders. Until that happens, and organizational leaders, until that happens, it's a pipe dream in the U.S. But reality is, this is a great starting point to help not only existing state consortia understand from their peers that are doing other events successfully and maybe seeing some results, but also when we see what's happened in state consortia outside of things like the State Commercial or Foreign Commercial Service in Study Colorado, Study Hawaii, what we did in Indiana with Destination Indiana. Those types of organizations have done incredibly well in terms of getting their elected leadership on board from the state and national government representatives, but also done a lot to help promote their states' destinations and see significant results after doing so. So I always think that these kind of organizations, and certainly USASD is one that can be a starting point to greater things, and I hope and will be eager to be a part of this in the weeks and months to come as this develops. But certainly there's a lot of potential there, and I wish those involved certainly my colleague Anna Wise at Towson University in Maryland. She's key on the study Maryland side, but also in the USASD side. Certainly wish her and the team there, study Maryland and Towson and the other leaders in Maryland who are driving this forward to wish them the best of luck with this, because there's a lot of potential that can come out of this. So that's the first topic of the day, and I'm looking forward to hearing from those of you who have been involved in the State Consortia. If your consortia is or isn't going to be getting involved in this, certainly I encourage you to do so. There's so much potential here, and really I think there's the sky's the limit in terms of where this organization can go. Now, next up on the topics for today, we're going to cover something that's was actually announced last year, actually March of last year, that the State Department, directive from the Trump administration, was going to begin asking visa applicants for their social media details as part of the evaluation process for applicants who were looking to come to the United States. Obviously, this impacts students. And one of the things that this particular article focuses on, it's a third-party article from the Epoch Times, and they're basically referencing Hill reported the same kind of story, so I'm gonna pop that link up as well. And what this means is really that applicants for non-immigrant visas, particularly student visas, in the weeks and months to come, will be asked to reveal certain details about their social media accounts. And the goal of this is to make sure that those that are applying don't have any terrorist links, any public safety threats, or are would be potentially dangerous individuals that would potentially come into the United States through legal means. So according to the Hill article, the social media identifiers will be incorporated into a background check review against watch lists generated by the U.S. government. And the main argument for this is in response to one of the terrorist attacks in 2015 an immigrant came in on a fiancé visa, who had declared terrorist sympathies. This was the San Bernardino bombing, shooting rampage in 2015 that killed 14 people. She, Tashreen Malik, on her social media accounts, had very clear sympathies for terrorist organizations, and it's that kind of thing that if they had been checking for it back then, could have potentially resulted in her not getting that fiancé visa to come and marry a U.S. citizen and then be part of this terrorist act on U.S. soil. So that's the rationale or the justification for the incident that's most clearly stated and referenced related to these new requirements. And so certainly I get that. And this is certainly a piece of the a piece of the immigration debate in the United States that are we putting people on watch lists? That certainly is part of the global war on terror that we've had since 2001 in an official capacity. That's been something that all of us have heard about and been part of, and that is that because and it's not singling out students; it's for all non-immigrant visa applicants. And in this world we live in, when people can say anything they want on social media and often get in trouble for saying what they do on social media in this kind of instant 24/7 news cycle that we live in, that these kind of things and social cycle that we live in, social world that we live in, these are issues that we got to deal with. Whether requiring social media account information from potential visitors to the United States is the route to go. That's certainly a question in terms of protecting the safety of American citizens and that type of thing. That is a very legitimate concern and certainly one I certainly can have sympathies for. But in this, in terms of anything that is affecting incoming immigrants, students, whatever it might be, this is one more thing. We knew this was coming for a while. Again, this originally was proposed in March of 2018 and just now coming into fruition. So it will be impacting institutional visa applicants that are going this for student visa appointments in the next few months. So certainly one to keep an eye on and one that you certainly want to be aware of as you're watching. And I'd be certainly curious to hear from institutions about any feedback they've gotten from students that might be coming for the fall that have already gone or are going soon and or maybe have questions about this. Certainly that's going to be something that will be well worth watching. It's certainly a slippery slope in terms of what can get asked now. And I'm really interested to see where this shakes out because there's I think in the long run, it's going to be not a bad thing, frankly, on the safety and security piece. I think that is the benefit that certainly outweighs the cost of doing that. But when you think about it, it's also we're in a situation now where CVS fees have also just gone up or will be going up in the next week or so for international students. So it's really a challenging situation for all. And one that I think is going to be one we need to keep our eye on. And certainly, moving forward, there's going to be more articles about this, and we're going to hear some stories on how it's gone horribly wrong, I'm sure. But it's part of the perhaps the necessary evils of immigration regulations and national security implications that we have to balance when considering any applicant who wishes to come to the United States for study, for visiting, for business, whatever it might be. All of these things are valid concerns, and we certainly want to be erring on the side of caution in that regard without being overbearing. And now that's the piece where certainly we're going to see a lot of pushback from civil liberties organizations and how this is far out stretching the realm of reasonableness in terms of what U.S. What immigration officials can do and State Department officials who are actually initiating this at the time of a visa application when students come for their interviews. I don't know process-wise. I don't know when that's occurring during the visa interview process. If that's being done after they submit their DS-160 and make their appointment. Or is that being done only after they meet with the applicant? I don't know if these questions are going to be on the DS-160. I assume they will, but I haven't heard anything specific about that yet. But certainly one to keep abreast of as things develop. So that's issue number two. The third big issue, and this certainly tends to outweigh in terms of significance any of the other ones we talk about here, is and that relates to China and what's been happening. No secret to anyone that tensions between the U.S. and China have ratcheted up significantly over the last few months, but certainly in the last week with raising the bar with a trade war on the Trump side and China's response is also a fairly measured one. It's not, and we saw the articles last week, and there were, for those who get the newsletter, I was referenced about 12 different perspectives on the China-U.S. trade war and how it's impacting international ed. And certainly check out that this past week's edition I posted the link to on the Facebook page, so you'll be able to scroll back and see all those news stories from the newsletter on the China situation. But what's the kind of foundation for this? And Dana, good to have you on. Sarah, good to see you as well. Hope you're both well. I hope you can join in the discussion here. So we're on China, and what actually got said last week? The Chinese Ministry of Education put out a statement urging Chinese scholars and students to increase their assessment. According to this Chronicle story I've just posted the link to, it urged their students and scholars to increase their assessment of the risk of studying in the United States. And the exact quote was, step up risk assessment and prepare accordingly. So it wasn't an outright ban, so that's obviously a silver lining in this. So this is obviously impacting higher education significantly and what this might mean. And the Chronicle also has one of the pieces in here is that in all but one U.S. state, and that's Alaska, education is among the top five services exported to China. So in terms of the Chinese students, scholars come to the United States universities for education and research and all of these wonderful things that we know they bring, quality things they bring to our country. So there's also the reasons for this statement have to do with the changes in how student visas are being reviewed in China by the U.S. consulate and embassies and the criteria we know about the kind of stepped up criteria for Chinese students and scholars that are back for vacation and maybe need to renew their visa. We've heard stories of hundreds being delayed a renewal of their visa because they're being checked, advanced administrative processing, they used to call it for post 9/11 days, something like that now. But that is for those in STEM fields because of the fears of, we've covered previously on the roundup here, fears of national security risks for research being stolen from the United States and taken back to China. There's been evidence of that, not just in the U.S., but in other Western nations as well. So that's causing perhaps a disproportionate response on the U.S.'s part in terms of how these things are being reviewed overseas, how visa renewals are being reviewed. But certainly one that is worth our attention here because it certainly impacts institutions. And there's other stories that we covered in this as well, particularly from one of my favorite Chinese sources, South China Morning Post, that had a story that fears that Chinese students, scholars are being used as political cannon fodder. Just posted the link to that story as well. So there's a lot of real concerns coming out of this, and perhaps this is just a I hope it's just this, just a tit for tat in the kind of growing trade war. But in terms of what the end results are going to be, there's really something that we need to keep an eye on because, frankly, when if it goes off the rails here with China, the implications will be far worse than what happened in post 9/11 and students from the Muslim world who are already coming at a lower rate than they were then for a number of reasons, but certainly the travel ban pieces have impacted the Muslim world more particularly than anywhere else. But we're now seeing that if this goes off with China and numbers would continue to drop, there had been a slowing of the growth in the Chinese populations coming to the U.S., frankly, and that was predictable because they were growing at a double-digit rate for a number of years in the 90s and early teens, so it wasn't sustainable. And certainly China's taste for international education beyond the U.S. has certainly been growing. And we're not the only country that is the number one destination or that has Chinese students as its number one international student group. UK, Australia, well, and Canada too, all share that population as their largest single source. So it's going to be really interesting to see, particularly with the fall intakes this year, how the numbers shake up from China, because in August, September, CBIS, by the numbers report, will certainly give us the most accurate real-time information on this. We'll see where that goes. But one of the articles that does also reflects what could potentially happen is we've talked about it on the midweek roundup before about how overly reliant so many schools are on China. And another South China Morning Post article indicates that obviously with Chinese undergrads and grad students making up the largest portion of foreign students at U.S. institutions, universities are obviously very welcoming of Chinese students as well as international students. But the reality is we've overinvested, and there have been a number of U.S. institutions that the Chronicle has certainly profiled, with Michigan State and University of Illinois, which we'll talk about in a little bit, about how they are so reliant on China as a source of international students and as a result a source of income for their institutions. We all know that Chinese students represent a third of all international students currently in the United States, and they themselves, as a portion of the economic contributions, represent about $13 billion annually in terms of their impact, according to the NASA report on that subject. So when you have that kind of imbalance, and certainly of all areas, this is the one area with China where we do have an imbalance. Certainly we don't send nearly as many students to China from the U.S. as we do receiving from China. But this is the issue that we're starting to see some potential serious blowback here as a result of the positions that the U.S. has been taking. So where is that going to lead? That's a great question. No one has the answers right now in terms of what the end game is going to be here. But if we look at one institution as kind of an example of what it means to overindulge in any particular country, it's certainly the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. And we've talked in the past, and there was news stories last fall about how their colleges, business and engineering at the University of Illinois have actually ensured their programs against a catastrophic drop in Chinese student populations because they're so dependent. There are over 5,700 Chinese students on the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign campus currently. This past year had a significant drop in applicants from China, but this current year, there's another story I just saw this morning, it says they might be up, but they have, because of they're so dependent on China in these two programs, the insurance policy, first time this has happened in U.S. higher ed, insurance policy was taken out of, I think, $64 million. That if the decline, year-on-year decline of Chinese students was at least 18.5%, this would kick in and would impact would be a cost recovery measure for the business and engineering colleges that are very much dependent on Chinese student populations. So. The dean of the College of Business, who's part of the insurance program, taking out the insurance policy at U of I, says that the recent concern Monday announcement by the Minister of Education was, although it is a reason for concern, according to this dean, but it's not a three-alarm fire, according to him. So. If that's the case, we'll see. We'll see what happens with this. Obviously, it's too early to tell what the long-term impact is going to be. But certainly, it's another thing in the end is not helping our bottom line in terms of our welcomeness. Not a word, but our country's welcoming attitude towards international students. What the ministry has done is responding in part to how the U.S. is treating some of their visa applicants. There was also language in there about safety concerns in the United States, particularly, and when we go back to the University of Illinois case, they had a Chinese graduate student that was kidnapped and murdered last year, and that person is on trial right now, but that was referenced in the report, in the Ministry of Education report, in terms of security concerns for students and safety concerns. So in the end, it's going to be down to the individual parents and students, but this will have some weight that students and parents will need to weigh the risks and conduct a risk assessment of coming to the U.S. Based on this information from the Ministry of Education. So we'll see where that goes, but very interested to see your reactions to this, and certainly if you have anything you'd like to contribute on that front, please feel free to do so. That We just want to public service announcement, just to let everybody know, next week we'll be taking a week break off the midweek roundup. I'll be attending a camp with my son down in Southern Ohio, so looking forward to reconnecting with everybody on the 26th. That's our next midweek roundup. So we'll be off on the 19th, need a little vacation, and then we'll come back on the 26th. So I want to thank everybody for joining me today, and don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or your favorite podcast provider. Check the replays of this on our YouTube channel, the playlist for all the midweek roundups. And certainly subscribe to the newsletter, because we want to make sure we keep you up to date on what's going on. So have a great day, and we'll catch up with you in a couple of weeks. Take care.